Hello and welcome back to Politics and Polls. I'm Julian Zelizer, a professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University. This is my colleague and co-host, Sam Wong.
Hi there, Sam Wong, professor of neuroscience and molecular biology, also director of the Princeton Gerrymandering Project.
So we're sitting here recording on April 23rd, which is now several days after the Mueller report has not just been completed, but released to the public. It's been scrutinized, and it had enough in there that was pretty bad, both in terms of the interaction between Trump campaign officials and Russians connected to the government, and then more importantly, this multi-piece case about obstruction that is at least laid out by Mueller, that it has triggered a discussion more serious than any time in the presidency. Should impeachment proceedings begin? And I think the debate's often confused. Many people say, do we impeach the president, as opposed to do you start a process whereby the Judiciary Committee sees if that is something to vote on? But it's in front of us. One of the Democratic candidates, Senator Warren, Elizabeth Warren, came out and says that has to start. The Democrats in Congress seem ambivalent about it. Speaker Pelosi said not yet, although she also said if that's where the facts lead us, that's where we'll go. Congressman Jerry Nadler, the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, has accelerated his committee's independent investigation of obstruction of justice. And Congressman Cummings of the Oversight Committee is ramping up their investigations as well. The Ways and Means Committee is trying to get the tax returns. So all of this has fueled a debate about what to do and how will the politics play out if impeachment is on the table. And down the line, we're going to talk more about the substance of each charge or each part of the report. But today, Sam, I thought we should talk a little bit about the politics. How will this unfold? What does it mean if the Democrats move forward with impeachment in an election year? So let's start the conversation. Let's start with Senator Warren, because she's interesting in that she was the first candidate who not only said, well, maybe I'll support it or possibly, as some of the others.
She broke the ice.
She broke the ice. She said, I read this on the plane. I landed. I read it carefully the next day. And this warrants impeachment proceedings. This is bad. This can't stand for the use of presidential power. What was your response to the way she handled it and even the response to her?
Okay, so I'm just going to say some naive, unironic things. And I realize this is very retro, but to focus on the substance of things, which is I seem to recall way back when I first learned about our system of government that that impeachment is a way of inquiring. It's sort of like an indictment. And if facts so warrant, then it's time to launch an inquiry and then if so, you know, hold a trial and then send it over, or rather form the articles of impeachment and then send it over to the Senate for a trial. So purely on unironic, just straightforward, open the 408-page PDF, look at it, read over it. It's a big horse-choking tome, but just do it. And, you know, Professor Warren did that, right? Because she's like, what does she do but read texts for a living? She's a law school professor. So she reads through the whole thing and it looks pretty bad. And just purely on the merits, let's say you don't care about your political future or what it looks like to a reporter in the press or whatever, it seems like there's a pretty significant offense here that at a very minimum ought to be investigated. So at some level, she's saying what's obvious, where one should just look at this report. He's, you know, former director of the FBI, a lifelong Republican, Mueller and his staff, whatever party they're from, but a lot of them are Republicans. They worked hard for several years. They came up with pretty strong evidence that that Donald Trump and his associates tried to obstruct justice. And then they come up with some narrow framing that says, well, you know, we can't really go after for, quote, obstruction of justice, unquote, because the Office of Legal Counsel says we shouldn't do that. But anyway, we certainly think he tried to obstruct justice. And so all that Senator Warren is saying is, okay, go do that. So to me, that seems pretty cut and dried. But
that's the party's principle. Part of the argument. What does a party do when confronted with this?
What does an American do?
Or it should be. I mean, the whole argument's about what do the Democrats do.
Right.
So Republicans, it's assumed, won't do anything.
So, right. So this is turned. So we're in this weird situation where, I guess, I don't know, you can tell me, but like I guess in Watergate, it was kind of like at the beginning, where members of the same party were not really wanting to go anywhere near the thing, right?
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely.
Yeah. And so, but the whole thing has gotten turned into, I have to say, the reaction to her statement was, first off, she made an impact with that statement, just in the unironic sense. But immediately, Smarty Pants reporters have turned this into something else. And I really hate to turn this into a discussion of meta issues like how the news media cover things. But Jonathan Martin, right, lead star reporter at the New York Times, says in some tweet storm, he says something along the lines of, okay, she said that, but other campaigns, which I will not name, other campaigns are saying that this is just to prop up her sagging fundraising. And my reaction to that is, wow, that's like really savvy, insidey talk about how Democrats are in disarray and how they can't keep their stance straight. And it's no longer about crimes. It's now about how Senator Warren is in trouble. And I was a little bit taken aback by that. The idea that one would take a straightforward statement like 408-page report from an investigator and dozens of staff working on a thing, leading United States senator says, okay, time to investigate further in the chambers of Congress. And then he says, see, how's her campaign doing? Like, it strikes me as this weird, the way I would put it is that if you're a professional reporter, you rely on other reporters to call you clever and to think of you as a leader and to hold you in high regard. And when you look at each other, rather than the facts of what you're reporting, it turns into who can be the cleverest, who can be the savviest, who can be the most distant from the actual governance that's at stake. And so I have to say that reaction on his part kind of was a little stomach turning.
Well, I think, there's particular cases, and then there's just how the media covers something like this. And that's not what we're talking about, but
right.
It is relevant.
Right, but the substance.
There is horse race coverage is something we talk about. That's how a lot of politics is viewed. It's who's up, who's down, what does this do for someone?
People follow that, right?
People follow it.
Most people don't have a law degree.
Yeah.
Most people don't study constitutional law. Most people are not interested in – they're kind of interested in civics. But
they like the horse race. It's
like
a competition.
It's like a sport. Who's up, who's down. And reporters aren't necessarily indifferent because, I don't know. I would guess that very few members of the National Press Corps have law degrees.
Yeah.
So why would they be interested in constitutional law?
Well, yeah. I mean, they could still be interested in the health of the democracy. That's ultimately what gets a lot of them into doing this. But I think you have a problem twofold. One is the instant reaction has been heavily about the politics of what to do and why people are positioning themselves in different ways. And it's within a few days, the actual substance of the report has been put on the shelf very often for that question. It's not an irrelevant question. It's true. Impeachment is a political process, and you want to know how will the parties react and position themselves. But that shouldn't then mask the actual substance when something big happens and is reported. And that will matter, though, because I think now as the Democrats decide what to do, as Republicans who might have sympathy for some of this decide what to do, the political coverage is going to be really important in how they make their decisions. I mean, you see that Joe Lockhart, for example, has a big op-ed in the Times today. He was the press secretary for Bill Clinton, and he makes the case that this is impeachable, that this is bad, this doesn't compare to what the Republicans went after Clinton for. That said, he thinks the politics will work against the Democrats, and the best thing is to let the party implode, the GOP, in 2000 on the weight of President Trump.
That just doesn't seem – I mean, okay, if we're going to engage that on political grounds, not bringing an impeachment inquiry seems a little bit weird because surely the next response on the other side is going to be if there was a real offense, surely you people would have launched an impeachment inquiry. We weren't shy about it with Clinton, so why would you be shy about it when you claim that there's a 400-page report that casts aspersions on our president?
Right? Well, let's get into that. So, all right. So,
By the way, I should interject. Yeah. That as of yesterday, Senator Kamala Harris has also called for an impeachment inquiry. So, it's not just one Democrat. It's starting to become, Elizabeth Warren and Kamala Harris are not slouches.
No, obviously. And you have George Conway who's called for it.
And Republicans, some Republicans.
John Yoo, I think, Did he write? Did he come? We can look it up later. Yeah. As of recording, someone told me that.
Yeah, but non-office-holding Republicans like Max Boot or whatever, right? Like have no dog in the fight in terms of their own careers.
Yep.
People who don't have to stand for election. Those Republicans are sounding the alarm. And they're saying, well, you know, there's 400 pages of pretty damning evidence here.
Well, look, so let's move from the question of how does the media coverage affect, how is it done on the initial revelations, to this big question everyone's asking, how does this play out politically? And for me, I wrote something on this that definitely got a lot of heat in response. My main argument was that I believe there's a principle argument that should be front and center for the Democrats as they consider what to do. If there's serious obstruction and misuse of power, at some point a party has to act and take that action with conviction.
This is your piece that's headlined, "It's not 1998 anymore."
Right. And so the second part is, how does this play out? My main point was, it's not clear how it plays out. It's not clear that this will play out like the 1990s, give other example, like 74, where Democrats certainly survived and actually won the 76 election, presidential, Senate, and House after President Nixon resigned. You can make an argument that while Republicans suffered in the 98 midterms, they still maintained control of power for a long time after that, including the presidency. And I could imagine, like you just suggested, that if Democrats have this in front of them after everything they've said, and let this sit. Not only is it a dangerous precedent, but politically, I could imagine the president totally turning this on them and, you know, using his witch hunt argument and this was all fake to rebuild Republican enthusiasm or at least support in 2020. So
well,
it's just not clear to me.
If you look back to 1998,
yeah.
Bill Clinton's approval ratings around the time of impeachment were floating between 60 and 70%.
Yeah.
And there were times when he went above 70%. He never went, as far as I can see, I think he never went below 50%. And now we've got the converse here, which is that we have this odd spectacle, really strange in modern politics, of a president, Donald Trump, whose approval ratings have never been above 50% his entire time as president. And that's really weird. Like, presidents usually get a honeymoon period. You know, they usually get a majority of the popular vote. There's all kinds of usuallys that happen here. And now with this, an entire party that's been taken over by someone who's never held public office before, who broke all the rules, who broke the mold. And, you know, his core supporters like him for that. But he's never had support from more than half of people. And there's early indications that his approval ratings have started to go down as a result of the drop of the
Mueller
report.
Yeah, there was an initial poll.
Yeah, it's a little hard to tell. Yeah. I think one needs another data point or two.
But you said never rely on one poll. That's
exactly.
You tell me all the time.
Right, exactly. And so the thing is, it's starting to look like he's ticked down a few points. You know, if you look head to head, like, you know, maybe as many as 6 points, but we just need to wait for a little bit more data. And so he's unpopular. He's like, you know, who he's unpopular as is like Goldwater or Hillary Clinton. I mean, like, that's how unpopular he is. And so at that level of unpopularity, just purely as a political calculation, it just doesn't seem like a real brilliant move to neglect a high quality investigation lasting several years. I mean, you know, we will get into it, and I hope we will. If you look in the minutiae of the Mueller report, they get into all the details of obstruction and about how Special Counsel Mueller basically says that it's time for Congress to investigate, right? I mean, that's what it says in the appendix of the report and in the footnotes of the report. And he basically is sending out a giant smoke signal saying, okay, I've done what I can within the Office of Legal Counsel rules. It is now time for Congress to step in. And he basically said that in his report. Yeah. So what's the holdup?
Yes. And let's remember, this comes on top of everything else that has bothered people about the way he conducts his presidency. So it's not as if the Mueller report stands alone. Everything, as you're saying with the polls and as you're saying, if we review the history of his presidency, that this was all of a sudden, this isn't a smoking gun. This is a confirmation gun. Yeah. And it shows that everything else we've been seeing behind the scenes, this was going on as well. And
I think it's more of a smoking corpse.
Smoking corpse. But it matters. Even with obstruction, I was thinking, you have the Twitter feed, which many people would say should be treated seriously. And throughout the investigation, he's used that as a tool to try to undercut it. So you have this, and you're right. I think Mueller is handing it off to Congress. His responsibility was not to reach a conclusion. It was to provide the roadmap, and the roadmap is pretty clear. So I guess what I would ask you, and you can tell me what you think, what drives President Trump's unpopularity? If we're thinking of the politics, I don't think it's policy, other than a few, maybe the wall and family separation. I think it's him. I think it's the way he conducts the presidency. And so if that is true, why not move forward with a very legitimate hearing into where should Congress go with everything that has just been revealed to the public with this investigation? Why does that hurt?
People who don't know anything about policy or the law just, I guess, turn on their TV and they see a guy who says exactly what he thinks and in many ways is quite unpresidential and seems bent on breaking the rules and conducting himself in a way that really doesn't match past presidents. Then if you know anything about how public life ought to be conducted or if you care about civics, then you see a second layer of disregard for the law. I think that second layer is kind of interesting because if you look there are Republicans, pretty prominent ones, who have really noticed this. And, you know, we can talk about Bill Kristol or Joe Walsh, who is not somebody who I would normally be prone to spending a lot
of
time
reading. Not the singer.
Been good. Joe Walsh, the pundit guy, yes. He's Walsh Freedom on Twitter, and he says that you can't ignore the Mueller report. And so there are prominent Republicans, again, those who are not holding office, who have seemingly nothing to lose, are saying in response to this report that on substantive grounds, it's time to look into it. So one advantage of the Mueller report is that it's official law enforcement. Law enforcement still has high approval ratings with the public. There are a few institutions that people still trust, law enforcement, the military. They're pretty high still in public life. And here is this, I hate to say it in terms of photographs and visuals, but here is this like large-jawed Republican former FBI director, Robert Mueller, who drops a 408-page report and says something really bad happened here. And, you don't have to be real sophisticated to see that that's a pretty serious situation. And so it just seems like under any normal circumstances, the right thing to do now is to start serious inquiries. So, for instance, like in Watergate, from what would be the first landmark event that launched Congress on an inquiry? And how long did it last until Richard Nixon stepped down?
Well, the first inquiry starts in 72 and it's killed. It's by Wright Patman, who's a Texas guy.
Before the election.
Yeah. And it's stifled. There's a great, if you want to hear a different podcast, Slow Burn, which is about Watergate. He has a whole episode on this. It's worth listening to. But then it's the Irving Committee, which is in May of 1973.
Sam Irving
is the senator, and Congress creates a select committee, not an impeachment proceeding yet, to conduct multi-month investigations. And it's still not based on any huge event. You obviously had the court case going on about the people who broke into the Watergate. You had news coverage coming out about what is the connection. Those hearings are extraordinarily important. And you'll have a special counsel through the Justice Department, which culminates in October of 1973, after the hearings with the Saturday Night Massacre.
And that's when Robert Bork, under the instruction of the Attorney General, fires Archibald Cox.
Exactly. And so all of that happened. We don't have that happen right now, meaning because Republicans had control of Congress, you haven't had much congressional input into investigating. It has all been done through the special counsel. But the special counsel produced this very visible public report now. And so the argument is we are where we are in late 73. That is when the House of Representatives voted for a resolution, which only has to pass by majority support, to send to the Judiciary Committee a resolution to look into impeachment. And that will happen in early 74 under Peter Rodino, a New Jersey congressman, who will chair it. And that's the question right now. So the report today seems to me to be enough of a basis for strongly considering that possibility, that process right now.
So it strikes me that, I was just a little kid back then, but but I do have vague memories of these hearings on the TV a lot.
This was the summer of 73.
Yeah, and I was like 6 or 7, and I don't know. I'm sure I had no understanding of what was going on, but it's a lot of hearings.
Yeah.
Like, I have a dim memory. There's too much autobiographical information, but I kind of remember Nixon resigning. But the point being that, forget about my childhood, basically a big public seminar.
That's what
like
it was.
Like a long-lasting—
with revelations.
Summer public seminar of witnesses, including people who otherwise evaded testifying in front of the microphone. And it seems like the only way to really get to the bottom of things, I mean, if we take at face value what say the president is saying, that somehow, you know, let's see, on one side we have the president, Bret Stephens of the New York Times, the New York Post, other supporters saying he's exonerated. And on another side, we have people like Senator Warren, you know, maybe this conservative guy, Joe Walsh, Bill Kristol, others saying, well, there's some pretty serious offenses here. So at some level, the right thing would be to clear his name. Trump should, in principle, invite an inquiry and say, okay, I'm clean and there was no collusion.
That's exactly right. It's
just a left-wing trap, so let's do it.
Right. Well, that was the argument with the Mueller investigation. It turned out, though, there was a lot there, which is probably why he really doesn't want it to continue.
And the whole thing's backwards, right? Because instead of a Saturday Night Massacre with Bork, like, it's sort of played out in this weird reverse way where Barr gets appointed more or less with a wink, wink, nudge, nudge, saying, you're going to help me out here. And so it's kind of like it's like a backwards Saturday Night Massacre, where he gets hired in order to do something like try to bury the report.
It was an equivalent. I really believe it was. And that the Saturday Night Massacre was Nixon's effort to get various people to fire a prosecutor in the Justice Department. Yeah. Two wouldn't. One finally did, Bork. And then what we saw with Barr was a very different strategy. He would bury it simply by defining it a way that was favorable to the president but didn't actually reflect the contents of the report. He'd do it twice, and hopefully within the course of, what was it, 3 weeks or something like that would be enough to shape the opinion. It didn't work. The weight of the report was significant enough to reopen this question.
But only about 30-odd pages of it redacted. So, So actually, it's sort of a mitzvah at some level that, like, it didn't get redacted further, right?
It was, but the strategy in some ways was to do everything in public. First, try to discredit it over the years, and now just to say it doesn't say what you think it does.
So as citizens,
and
you and I are card-carrying intellectuals, seems like what we should want is to basically just have a book club and just read the damn report.
That's
and just
true.
Find out what it says. Just like figure out what's in it. Don't get lost in this meta narrative of who's up and who's down and all this stuff. That's this cloud, this miasma of smarty pants commentary. Like, why not just do a close reading of the book itself and just say, okay, here's 408 pages. Let's just do it.
I'm in favor of that, and it's very good. But I also think we have enough out there, and members of Congress do, where decision time is coming.
Oh, yes, that's true. They need
to decide what to do.
What does it mean to perform oversight?
Right. And it is a decision if they decide to do nothing.
Yeah.
And I'll understand the arguments and the fears, but it is a decision. The decision is, this does not necessarily rise to the level of impeachment. They go on record with that, not just Republicans, Democrats. And that's the precedent set. And I think that's important. It's not enough to say, well, we're going to try to get a Democrat elected in 2020. That's not really a response to this kind of evidence.
I mean, it does raise constitutional questions about what the heck impeachment is for. So if we have impeachment reserved for, say, Andrew Johnson and Bill Clinton.
Right.
And then Nixon didn't actually get impeached, right? Like, it just, the articles left the Judiciary Committee.
Yes.
Sure, it was headed down that direction. But in the end, Nixon resigned before there could be a trial. And so we have a situation in which, like, at the highest level for the presidency, impeachment has been used for Johnson and Clinton, almost for Nixon. Mm-hmm. And if it doesn't happen this time, then it raises in my mind some certain lack of correlation between significance of the offense and deployment of the remedy.
Yeah, and then you have this other part of the argument. In addition, so it raises the question, why do we even have it? When is it used? If it's not used for everything we've seen, Mueller report, and you can argue beyond, then probably it's not really a functional process anymore. The imperial presidency is triumphant, period. We can end the history books there.
That would certainly be a change in our system of government.
Yes. But the second question, I'm curious what you think. So the other argument politically that I've heard a lot of is, look, in addition to the Fox universe, Fox News universe, the reality is Senate Republicans will never vote for impeachment. It is already lost before the process begins. So why should Democrats go down a road where they vote for it, the Senate says no, and he still claims he's vindicated, but you've lost all that time in terms of the election, talking about health care, talking about immigration. Is it not a politically unwise move for Democrats to do that? And does it not risk a second term?
I'm just having trouble parsing that because if
the
evidence is so...
I get this argument all the time.
No, yeah. I get it.
It's
just that if the offense is serious enough, as it appears to be, then the minimum due diligence of Congress is to follow the facts where they might lead. That just seems like a minimal duty of our elected representatives, Democrat or Republican, to take a serious report like this. So I guess the political calculation is it's a loser from the start, so why do it? I guess if we're going to get really clever schmever and go down that road, it's going to be the counter response to that is, do we really know what it's going to look like to talk about this for a year and a half, have the facts dragged out, look at the whatever it might be, tax returns, evidence of communications and counterintelligence operations, Russian contacts. I would say that we know part of that story, but Benjamin Wittes over at Lawfare has pointed out that Mueller has somewhat shied away from the counterintelligence aspects and the actual undermining of American elections, that was sort of, in some sense, a sideshow. I have to go back and look at the report, but a bit of a sideshow, and that what he was really going after was criminal offenses possibly committed by the associates of candidate Trump and now President Trump. And so I think that an inquiry would reveal facts, and we don't really know where those facts would go. Saying that there are not going to be 67 votes to convict someone, well, I don't know. Maybe there shouldn't be, because maybe we don't have the facts yet. So why would you? It's sort of like bringing an indictment versus actually holding a trial. And it appears, as far as I can tell, that if we're to believe what this special counsel has uncovered, it looks like an investigation would be in order. The politics of it, politics of it might be, if you're a smarty pants and you're interested in who's up and who's down, then it can only end poorly. But I just don't know the answer to that because the facts have not been fully uncovered yet.
The other thing is I was talking with a very distinguished friend of mine, another academic, who's a strong supporter of Bernie Sanders. Mm-hmm. And I was making we were having this kind of conversation. And I did ask at the end, and we didn't have time to finish, like, okay, so you can't be forceful and bold on this matter, meaning impeachment, when this kind of evidence is in front of you, overwhelming evidence that something might have, we might be at an impeachment level, but you're willing to throw everything on a socialist who's proposing very radical policies, which I don't think it's impossible for him to win. But there's a boldness in terms of that candidate and policy, and Democrats feel this on many issues. But on this, they are so scared, a lot of the party, that it's too much.
So what would it take?
It's a funny dichotomy.
What would it take guys to bring an impeachment? I guess having more votes in the Senate.
Having more votes in the Senate. We're almost locked into the impact of polarization, meaning because it's so polarized, because Republicans are so unified, you don't do anything.
Okay, so the logical outcome then is political polarization leads to a closely divided Senate, also other factors. And under such circumstances, impeachment of any president is doomed to fail, whether it be Bill Clinton or Donald Trump. It's pretty much game over for impeachment. And so therefore, impeachment is off the table no matter what the president does. And then that's one side of the pincers. And the other side of the pincers is Office of Legal Counsel over the Department of Justice saying that criminal proceedings should never be brought against a sitting president. And so what that leads to is what you're saying, which is the imperial presidency, which is that as long as the king is the king, there's nothing that can ever be done, no matter what party that president is a member of. And so de facto, saying don't launch an inquiry now is the same as saying the president is immune from criminal prosecution as long as he or she is president.
I think you're getting close to that. And
that's weird.
And this isn't the night. Everyone compares it to Clinton.
Yeah.
The substance of the Clinton impeachment was the problem as much as the impeachment process.
Sure.
Many Americans, it wasn't that they're against impeachment. It was that this was about him hiding or lying about his sexual relationship with an intern. And that wasn't worthy of how far Republicans are going. Today, we're talking about a report that's much more grandiose. It's about interference in an election. It's about the conduct of a campaign. And then it's not just one kind of lie to hide. This is ongoing efforts to totally stifle the investigation. So even that seems problematic to say, well, this is going to play out like the 1990s. You know, I'm not sure it might, but I don't think that's automatic at all.
So,
and it might.
The calculation to not investigate further is basically
it's
a political calculation, and I've got the impression with the strength of candidates like Trump and like Sanders in 2016 that there's a substantial sector of voters who don't really want the political calculation. They want authenticity, and that was
right.
At some level. If we're going to go there in terms of guessing what voters want, there is this calculated nature of deciding what's going to play and what's not going to play. And one advantage, I mean, this clever fellow, Jonathan Martin at the Times, has said that it has to do with fundraising. But I will point out that when Senator Warren sent out to her email list her view that it was time to inquire further, she didn't send out a donate button. It was just an email that just said, it's time to do this. No donate button, none of that stuff about like fundraising or like I want to get my numbers up by the whatever second quarter reporting deadline, all the stuff that people talk about when they're candidates. She just said it straight up, I looked into it, I read the thing, it is time to move forward. And that seems, at some level, that's not calculated.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's funny. You hear some of the candidates will say something. It's bold and visionary.
Yeah.
And then she says something like this, and instantly there's a scratching beneath the surface for what was the calculation.
Is it because she's a professor or a woman or like what's going on there?
I don't know.
If Buttigieg said that or I don't know.
Right. He talks about getting rid of the Electoral College. So I see the arguments for that. But it's a pretty bold thing to say.
Is that calculated?
Right. That's what I'm look, at some level, all positions, they're going to think about
calculated.
The politics.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean they're disconnected.
But why enter public life if everything's a calculation?
Right.
Like at some point, shouldn't you say what you want?
Right. Well, look, these are the kinds of questions now Democrats are wrestling with, but they will have to do it in that media environment. So I'm interested in the end how that shapes where their decisions go. Because, you know, every step of this will be about 2020 and what the impact is and on different candidates, whereas there's less space in the media world for what do you do when this kind of substance is put before you about the president of the United States.
When Donald Trump called for a big old wall to be built in the autumn of 2015, was that calculated? I guess it was
sort
of, maybe it was calculated, but at some level, it's what the
but
guy
it's
actually,
also out of principle.
It was
right.
what he actually wanted. I mean,
right.
Whether he wanted an actual wall or whether he wanted to just find some other way to keep out people of a different ethnicity, like whatever it was, it was at some level what he or somebody near him actually wanted.
Well, look, I think for each party, there's an issue, a political issue. For Democrats, for a lot of them, there are some who probably say impeachment, and rightly so, should only be used in very serious, necessary circumstances, for sure. But I think for most Democrats, it's do you move forward with this process and investigation, or do you say that the calculation is it's too risky for 220? And as a Democrat, that's what you need to be focused on. More important than anything is replacing him with a Democrat. And for Republicans, it's this ongoing debate about, you know, what principles or ideas do you put aside in pursuit of partisan loyalty? And a lot have already gone by the wayside.
I think that if Trump's approval numbers, I mean, I hate to say it about the data, but if his approval numbers continue to go down, then that could be a dog whistle to Democrats to grow some courage.
Oh, I see. The approval post report.
Yeah, exactly. If his numbers keep on going down, then like it seems like it.
That and the weight of what's. So there are investigations continuing, and Nadler is using that platform He subpoenaed Don McGahn, who was key in one of the stories. I do think, maybe I'm not cynical enough, but powerful information still has the potential to shape or reshape the politics. And that can also be a factor. I mean, the Mueller report did put this conversation on the table in a way nothing else has.
Yeah, I'm just old-fashioned. I just am having trouble imagining not inquiring at this point.
You're not cynical enough on that.
I'm not cynical.
You haven't learned in a couple of years.
Right. I read a 400-page thing as much as I could, and I looked at it some. And, you know, here's a thought. Here's from cognitive science. Here's a thing you can do. Like, imagine reading the precis of that report, just the first pages or whatever, and imagine replacing the word Trump with Obama. And just think to yourself, how would I feel if it was some other person other than Trump who had done these things? Like, if it was Barack Obama who had colluded with Iran. Or, I mean, you know, you could imagine silly things like, you know, imagine if Malia Obama had been in contact with Iranian spies, which, okay, that's all right. That's a little crazy. But imagine if Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama had been in touch with Iran in an attempt to swing the election. And just think to yourself, what would you think if that had been the case? And that's a thing that cognitive scientists and philosophers call consider the opposite. And if you consider the opposite and think, ooh, I would think that was pretty bad. We better launch an impeachment inquiry, then I would say, okay, well, then apparently you think that it's pretty serious. And so I think one difficulty is that it's really super hard for us to get outside our mental silos and think about what we think independent of what we think of a particular president. And, you know, if you look at our recent guest, Senator Flake, you know, to him, he favored the policies. And so to him, there was this big carrot that went against these other factors in the case of, say, you know, Senate procedure and so on, and the breakage of traditions. In this case, people on the Republican side like their president. They like the policies, and they think, well, we want to keep that. But if they were, I would say intellectual honesty would require us all to take any damning statement about any politician and insert the name of somebody who we felt differently about and ask how we felt about it. And if you take the Mueller report and just look at it on the first page of it and just replace the word, do a search and replace on Trump to Obama, it would be pretty upsetting. Yes. And I think that would be a logically consistent way to read that report.
I think that's a very good exercise. I don't think anyone will do it.
No.
It's a good professorial idea.
Well, maybe somebody should take the PDF and like do a replace and like create a document that replaces Trump with Obama just to see how that looks.
But it's relevant.
So, yeah, I think, you know, like I was saying about like doing a search and replace. Look, Senator Cory Booker's office has released a searchable version of this report. And I'm going to take the introduction of Volume 1 and I'm going to replace Trump with Obama or Clinton and just see how it sounds. And, you know, I think that would be a pretty good exercise for people to look at that. I can do it, take a screenshot of it.
At a minimum, it's a gut check, meaning I don't know if anyone reads that and has pretty strong political positions and would say, oh, yeah, I'm going to flip, especially members of Congress.
No, it's not going to work. I'm just saying.
It is an exercise. It is actually a great exercise about where you stand on these institutional
issues.
How
would I feel? I mean, it goes both ways. Like if you're a Democrat
agreed.
And you see that and you think, holy cow, is this true? Or you say, oh, it's just a witch hunt against Hillary Clinton or whatever. Like, I think it's
fair.
A worthwhile thing to do. Like if Sean Hannity got told of this and it said Hillary Clinton, for sure his hair would be on fire. But what about a more rational person who actually thinks about these things? So
agreed.
All right.
Let's
all right,
do
so
the
experiment. All right, so
I'm
going to do it. Gee, apply my incredible computer skills to this.
You know, we've heard for now 2 years everyone talking about how our institution's so broken. How does all this kind of stuff happen? And it goes beyond Trump. It's about the state of politics. And so these are the moments when part of how this happens is right in front of Congress, and Congress needs to make a decision. It was like in 2000, everyone after the election, electoral college reform, we can't have this happen, and we didn't do anything about it. That fell by the wayside. So there are turning point moments like that where the dangers or dysfunction of an institution is actually the issue, which is rare. And then you watch to see if there's a response. And I'm not sure there will be, but I think as we've discussed today, I don't think it's clear politically what Democrats should do. I do think substantively there's a really strong case to at least start the next stage of a proceeding. But we'll see by the time we record again.
I would say if we believe in our current system of what we believe to be our government and our system of democracy, then the logical outcome is to investigate. And if we don't, if we don't believe in that, if we think that it's something that can change and it's okay to change to whatever the new form of government we have in the coming decades, if we're okay with that, then fine, don't investigate.
And I do think, let me add to that, I don't think the question should be, what's the best way to get Trump out of office? I hear that too. And so then people say, well, an election's easier, better, and more likely. I think if that's the question, it is actually skewing why we have impeachment. That's ultimately about, has the president abused his or her power? And that's how Democrats need to think about this. And if the answer is yes, and I think it might be a yes, then you have to trigger this process.
Yeah. No.
That's our opinion, but who listens to us?
No.
Except for all the listeners.
Yes,
so,
thanks everybody.
Thanks everyone for listening. Once again, you can find us on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Spotify. Listeners, if you have questions for us to address on the show, please email us at politicspolls@princeton.edu or tweet them at us. I'm at Julian Zelizer.
And I'm at Sam Wang, PhD.
Thanks for joining us, and we'll be back soon on Politics and Polls.
Bye, everybody. To him, there was this big carrot that went against these other factors in the case of, Senate procedure and so on, and the breakage of traditions. In this case, people on the Republican side like their president. They like the policies, and they think, well, we want to keep that. But if they were, I would say intellectual honesty would require us all to take any damning statement about any politician and insert the name of somebody who we felt differently about and ask how we felt about it. And if you take the Mueller report and just look at on the first page of it and just replace the word, do a search and replace on Trump to Obama, it would be pretty upsetting.
Yes.
And I think that would be a logically consistent way to read that report.
I think that's a very good exercise. I don't think anyone will do it.
No.
It's a good professorial idea.
Well, maybe somebody should take the PDF and like do a replace and like create a document that replaces Trump with Obama just to see how that looks.
But it's relevant, you know. We've heard for now 2 years everyone talking about how our institution's so broken. How does all this kind of stuff happen? And it goes beyond Trump. It's about the state of politics. And so these are the moments when part of how this happens is right in front of Congress, and Congress needs to make a decision. It was like in 2000, everyone after the election, electoral college reform, we can't have this happen. And we didn't do anything about it. That fell by the wayside. So there are turning point moments like that where the dangers or dysfunction of an institution is actually the issue, which is rare. And then you watch to see if there's a response. And I'm not sure there will be, but I think as we've discussed today, I don't think it's clear politically what Democrats should do. I do think substantively there's a really strong case to at least start the next stage of a proceeding. But we'll see by the time we record again.
I would say if we believe in our current system of what we believe to be our government and our system of democracy, then the logical outcome is to investigate. And if we don't, if we don't believe in that, if we think that it's something that can change and it's okay to change to whatever the new form of government we have in the coming decades, if we're okay with that, then fine, don't investigate.
And I do think, let me add to that, I don't think the question should be, what's the best way to get Trump out of office? I hear that too. And so then people say, well, an election's easier, better, and more likely. I think if that's the question, it is actually skewing why we have impeachment. That's ultimately about, has the president abused his or her power? And that's how Democrats need to think about this. And if the answer is yes, and I think it might be a yes, then you have to trigger this process.
Yeah. You know?
That's our opinion, but who listens to us?
No.
Except for all the listeners.
Yes, so, thanks everybody.
Thanks everyone for listening. Once again, you can find us on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Spotify. Listeners, if you have questions for us to address on the show, please email us at politicspolls@princeton.edu or tweet them at us. I'm at Julian Zelizer.
And I'm at Sam Wang, PhD.
Thanks for joining us, and we'll be back soon on Politics and Polls.
Bye, everybody.
You've been listening to Politics and Polls, a podcast series produced by WooCast. This podcast is intended to be informational only and does not reflect nor represent the views of Princeton University or the Woodrow Wilson School of Public and International Affairs.